no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manuk. You can hear the Illegal Curve live Saturday mornings from 9 to noon on TSN Radio 1290.
All righty, it's Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, bottom of hour number two. Hope you're enjoying yourself. Hope you're having an enjoyable Saturday morning, the 30th of January. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And, of course, the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, that's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From NHL.com, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Mike Zeisberger. Mike, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Good morning, guys. It's always a pleasure being on the Illegal Curve radio show, and I got to say, your producer extraordinaire was telling me that you're experiencing some tropical-like conditions out there. It's actually warmer than this year.
I think we're at about, four below, five below, yeah. Something like that.
It's balmy here in Winnipeg right now.
Yeah, so the River Trail and all the local skating rinks will undoubtedly be packed with people outside enjoying the best of this unseasonably warm weather. But, Mike, I got to say, actually, this whole winter, we had two cold days this week, and those were sort of the first two really cold Winnipeg-esque winter days that we've had. As soon as we get an airport and as soon as we get Wi-Fi, we're going to be a destination for NHL free agents.
Well, listen, guys. The next time one of these aloof people from Eastern Canada comes up and says something about Winnipeg weather, just remind them that we've had minus 19 and 18 in Southern Ontario the last couple of nights. So, you know, right now Winnipeg is the tropics of Canada.
There you go. I think that'll be the new slogan for the city. I like that. Mike obviously brought you on to talk about the Canadian division, the North division. You know, I look at the Winnipeg Jets, and they sit here with a record of 5-2, which is a good record. You know, you're happy with that. And I look at the team like the Vancouver Canucks, who the Jets are going to play today, and they're now back up to 5-5. But both the Jets and the Canucks have swept the Senators in three games each. Can you really tell how good a team is when so many of their victories come against the Ottawa Senators?
You know, that's a hard statement to make because, obviously, you got to take advantage of what the schedule says who you're going to play. And the Ottawa Senators are on there. The Canucks were reeling. There was a lot of heat in Vancouver on the Canucks and on Jim Benning, which is kind of ironic because, you know, what was that? Five, six games after they made that kind of Cinderella run through two rounds last year, all of a sudden Jim Benning can't do his job as general manager. I mean, you know, people have to calm down a little bit, but that's the passion of hockey in this country. But then they play Ottawa three times and boom, 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 they're back into it. You know, I just think that you got to beat who's on your schedule. You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs right now are off to a great start. They're 7-2. One of their losses came against Ottawa, which is something that the Jets and the Canucks have not done, is lose to Ottawa. So, I just think that a lot of this now is confidence. I think Blake Wheeler said it the other day that you know, it's only at this point of the season that this would be the beginning of the regular season in a normal year because they didn't have any exhibition games. So guys are up to speed. You know, you can't use that excuse of having rust anymore. So I'm fascinated to see what happens in the game tonight between the Canucks and the Jets because, yeah, they've got Ottawa on the slate, and they've taken care of business. But no more excuses now, okay? And nothing about fitness, nothing about working the kinks out. We're ready to go. Both these teams have taken advantage of their games against the Senators. And now, you know, the one thing about this Canadian division, guys, and of a lot of cool things, every game is a 4-point game.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And you mentioned the Toronto Maple Leafs earlier, Mike, and obviously, you know, just by points, they're number one in the NHL, even though they've played, you know, a couple games more than some teams, including the Habs and the Jets, who are right behind them in that Canadian division. But you mentioned, you know, there was the disappointing loss against the Senators, but, you know, since then, they've only lost the one game, 7-2. And is this exactly, you know, what we expected out of the Toronto Maple Leafs? We know who's leading the way. Obviously, you know, the Jack Campbell injury has maybe meant that Freddie Anderson has played, you know, a little bit more than we expected. But, you know, nine games into the season, how would you assess the Toronto Maple Leafs? It's early, but are they performing better than you thought? Or is this kind of exactly how you thought it would be, where, you know, we're seeing some high-scoring games, we're seeing some one-goal games, and obviously the big boys like Matthews, Marner, and Tavares are leading the way?
Well, you know, first of all, I temper my expectations with the Leafs because this is, you know, I know it's the regular season right now, but this is a team, even though they've had some, you know, marquee names on them, they have not won a do or die series in the salary cap era. Think about that, guys. I mean, Pat Quinn was behind the bench the last time the Maple Leafs won a do or die series, whether it be playoffs or qualifiers last year. So, I'm more of the opinion that, yeah, that looks great on paper. Show me what you can do. Couple things about the Leafs this year. Number one, they haven't won a game by more than two goals, which shows me that they're learning how to win those close games, which is something they had issues with last year. Sure, you'd like those blowout victories as part of that, but the more important thing is learning to win those close games, because look, when you get to the playoffs, that's where what most of the games are. Yeah, Tavares and Matthews and Marner have lived up to billing, but you know, there's a couple things. Number one, they've scored 12 power play goals in nine games, and there's just a different feel about this team with a guy like Wayne Simmonds on the team. They planted him right in the opposing goaltender's face on the power play. All of a sudden, he scored in three consecutive games. All of a sudden, you know, the Maple Leafs are scoring greasy goals. It's not always trying to do the one-timers or the tic-tac-toe goals. They're getting the greasy goals because, you know, Wayne Simmonds has kind of been one of these guys, even though he gets limited minutes, but he brings an aspect to this team which they didn't have. And it was funny, we were talking to Mitch Marner yesterday about the net front presence on the power play of Wayne Simmonds, and it's something that this team has been sorely lacking. And Marner said, you know, Wayne has told me five or six different times, just shoot it right at my stomach. And he goes, because, you know, if it'll hit him in the stomach and it'll fall down and he'll still be hacking at it trying to get it in the net. So there is that blue-collar element, I think, that was missing from this team in seasons past. And look, Thornton brought it before he got hurt. Zach Bogosian has been really good at it. So that is the biggest thing that I see. I mean, it's always been a team with star power, but now they're getting some dirt under their fingernails, and it's paying off with some goals where, you know what, within 3 or 4 feet of the net, where that's where you're going to have to get goals when the games are close.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com talking about the North Division.
Now, Mike, we happened to be lucky enough to be on air last week when the big trade that's still having reverberations today between the Jets and the Blue Jackets. So what was the view out east of the trade? And as a quick follow-up to that, what do you think of Pat Bisson's comments about John Tortorella and his, you know, how he's kind of maligned his client, Pierre-Luc Dubois?
Well, first of all, I've known both Torts and Pat for a long time. Pat is, among the agents, he's one of the guys that I have the most respect for. And Torts, we've seen what he can get out of players. I mean, this to me is more like a he said, she said. And when I look at it, that one game against Columbus, it's difficult for me to say, when I see the footage, that that Dubois was going 100%. It did not look like that. And because of that, I understand why there was a little pushback from Torts. At the same time, we've seen what John Tortorella, you know, publicly does to certain players over the years, and some guys, they just it just doesn't jive with them. And I think that, you know, in the modern day coaching has become an art where a coach looks at the 20 guys that are in his dressing room, or 23 guys, and a lot of the new school good coaches look at every guy and treat them differently depending on their personality. Some can take the tough love, some are very sensitive, and they play off that. Torts is more across the board. Look, I'm going to coach everybody the same way, and that's the way it is. So I just think that with Dubois' personality, it just wasn't a good fit. And, you know, these guys, like I said, it's a he said, she said right now. But I for me, just, you know, clear the slate, start anew. I think Dubois is going to have a great, great career in Winnipeg. It's really cool that his dad, you know, works for the Moose. I think that will be a stabilizing factor. The Jets look great at center for a long time to come with Dubois and Shifley. But on the other hand, when I look on the at the trade, there's just something in me, and I understand the values of centers, but there's just something in me that says, you know, at his age, Patrick Laine is going to score 50 goals, and in my opinion, multiple times in this league. And so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, hopefully we'll all be around here to talk, 10 years later and look back and say who won the trade. But for the time being, I think the players involved won the trade because they had to get out of the situations that they were in. Both Rossovic and Laine going to Columbus and Dubois coming to Winnipeg.
Mike, final question for you. Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com is our guest. You have one panic button. Are you pressing it if you're a an Edmonton Oilers fan or a Calgary Flames fan?
You know what? Neither, because I think there's still a lot of time left. Edmonton, there's some urgency against the Leafs tonight, but, you know, and you hate to use this as a pun, but they're waiting to play the Ottawa Senators, and we saw how that brought the Vancouver Canucks back into the mix. And the Flames really haven't played that, I know they've lost three straight, but, it's still very early, so I want to see how things play out. No sense in pressing the panic button yet. And like I said, every game is 4 points. So, you know, if you're trying to catch teams that are ahead of you, you have a chance not only to play them head-to-head 9 or 10 times, but every win you have over that team, it's not like they're going to keep pace with you. And that's one of the many things that I think is intriguing. But, you know, those two Alberta teams, I think where we will see it, guys, is, and I don't know if it's possible to do this, but can we have more of a sense of urgency when those two teams play together against each other in a battle of Alberta? I mean, the intensity is high enough, but, when you've got a couple teams like that are kind of struggling out of the gate, it's just going to, you know, press the gas pedal more of how much they want to beat each other. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I will say this, for the five other teams in the North Division, and probably four because they throw Winnipeg in the mix, but you don't want to let the Montreal Canadiens, Toronto Maple Leafs, and the Jets get too far ahead, because then all of a sudden you've got, four teams battling for one spot. And I said it at the beginning of the year in this division because how competitive it is, other than the Ottawa Senators, okay, with four teams making the playoffs, there's going to be two fan bases in this country that are going to be mighty peeved off at not making the playoffs because talent-wise, there's six teams in this division that are playoff-worthy.
Mike Zeisberger is with NHL.com. Mike, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, and we'll do it again real soon.
Listen, you guys and all the listeners, be safe and healthy. Call me anytime, and all the best to all my friends in Winnipeg. You guys take care.
Take care, Mike. Thanks so much. When we come back, we look at tonight's Jets-Canucks game and preview the upcoming four-game series between the Jets and the Flames. Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN1290.ca.
You alluded to having discussions about stuff. Has it come to a meeting yet or anything?
Yes.
Was that last night or today?
Players knows about it. That's the most important part.
And, you know, was there a lot of frustration aired, or is there a very calm approach to this?
As I said, the players that was in there, we like to keep it in the room.
Calgary Flames defenseman Rasmus Anderson, not speaking, I would say, eloquently about the topic, but admitting that, yes, the Flames did have a team meeting, a players-only meeting, after losing three games in a row, including Thursday night's loss to the Montreal Canadiens. The Flames will look for redemption.
Tell me you saw that John Boy thing.
I did see the Matthew Tkachuk flipping the puck at Tkachuk, and then Tkachuk going Looney Tunes.
And him, this John Boy account who does, I guess,
does baseball. He breaks down baseball fights.
Yeah, but he did it such a funny job breaking down the Tkachuk getting angry at Muzzin.
It was so pretty funny. Good. The thing's not going well for the Flames. We know the Flames are in town for the Jets, and the Flames are going to meet four straight games after tonight, three in Winnipeg, and then the finale in Calgary. The Canucks in town to face the Jets. Another late night start tonight, 9 o'clock. Dave's already yawning. Hopefully you'll get a little nap in. No Laine Dubois trade today. So far, I think you might be able to squeeze a nap in there this afternoon.
That's right. Mr. Yeah, last week was probably, I think, like an 18-hour day.
Yeah. It was a busy day.
I left the arena at like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, that's late. Yeah. It's a long day.
7 o'clock start with you guys or getting ready for the show and all that stuff, and not 1 o'clock just to get home. And then, of course,
yeah, I know. You're nocturnal, though, so it's not a big deal. Anyways, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Had a lovely Illegal Curve Sandwich for lunch yesterday. Had a nice little Zoom lunch meeting with some friends. We all had Illegal Curve Sandwiches, so shout out to Julie, Carly, and Bobby as well.
Someone's doing well.
The four of us sitting around having Illegal Curve Sandwiches, that's a nice way to spend a Friday lunch hour, let me tell you.
So everybody had their own Illegal Curve Sandwich?
Correct.
Nice.
Yeah, all four
of us. Were they bought individually or together?
I bought mine individually, and then somebody bought for the other three, because they all live in a closer proximity.
Nice. First time having one?
No, it's a tradition that we have where it's for birthdays. We're celebrating a couple birthdays in the group. Last January, we were able to do it in person. This January, obviously, had to do it.
Love it.
Via Zoom. Let's talk about tonight's Jets-Canucks game. No surprise, Connor Hellebuck's going to be in net for the Winnipeg Jets tonight. Very brief game day skate, not a lot of news or any news really to speak of coming out of it just yet. We'll wait to hear what the Zoom interviews have to say in the next hour or so, and any relevant news we'll bring to you. You know, this Canucks team, they've won three in a row, so that's good for Vancouver, because obviously they were it was apoplectic over there on the West Coast. They sweep Ottawa, outscoring them 16-3 in those three games. This is a Canucks team that has dropped 10 straight to the Winnipeg Jets. Obviously, that's been, you know, well chronicled over the last number of years.
Yep.
I mean, this Jets team, I mean, the Canucks are playing better. They're feeling better about themselves. But you have to wonder if they are in the back of their mind thinking, yes, but those three wins came against the Senators, although the Jets could say the same thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And not only, you know, have you turned your early season around with those wins over the Senators, but the Lotto line with Pettersson, JT Miller, and Brock Besser wasn't playing well until the last couple of games against the Senators. And you know, Thomas Drantz, who covers The Athletic, you know, he knows the Canucks better than anybody, and he wrote about this recently. Like, Pettersson's play has, even though his analytics have been pretty good in terms of, you know, expected goals for and against, he hasn't looked like the same player that you expect, right? You expect Pettersson to be driving the bus, and he's been good, you know, on the power play, and he's got some goals. I think he's got three, but, you know, it's really been, you know, Bo Horvat's line that has been driving the bus, and, you know, Nils Höglander's on that second line. He's a rookie, for those who don't know him, and, you know, he's been very impressive, but, you know, there hasn't been a surprise in terms of, you know, this Canucks team, they give up a lot of shots. They give up the most shots in the entire league. They're a team that's, you know, going to split their goaltenders. They've used Demko and Holtby each five times. That's no surprise. We thought that going in. There was really no expectation that, you know, it's not like with Hellebuck in Winnipeg or, you know, with Vasilevsky in Tampa Bay, you don't have a number one goaltender, you know, in that sense where a guy is going to play 80% of the game. So that's not a surprise. What has been the real surprise is, as I mentioned, you know, that top line, which was one of the best lines in the entire NHL last year, mm-hmm. has struggled. Now, the defense also, you know, there have been some, you know, spotty play in terms of, you know, you've actually had Jordy Benn playing with Quinn Hughes on that top pair. You know, we thought it was going to be maybe Chris Tanev. You know, Chris Tanev has actually been really good for the Canucks, you know, essentially, you know, replacing...
for the Flames.
Pardon me, not Chris Tanev. Nate Schmidt has been
I was like, what are you talking about there?
Nate Schmidt has been as advertised, but, you know, you've had Travis Hamonic, who struggled at times. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been playing on that third pair. So, I mean, the Canucks right now are in a work in progress, and, you know...
You look at that roster, though.
It has been mixed. That's the best way that I would describe...
There's not a lot of depth on that roster. I mean, that top line of Miller, Pettersson, and Besser is pretty good.
And no, Drew, that's one of the top lines in the league.
Right, that's a very good line. But
it's one of the best.
Okay, but you look after that. You look after that for this Canucks team. There's not a ton of depth up with their forward group, and there's nothing about their defense that I would say scares you in any particular manner. So, you know, you look at this team and...
Well, but what do you mean by scare? I mean, like, you've got...
I think it scares you in terms of their defensive play, but not so much...
I mean, Quinn Hughes is, you know, one of the best defensemen. He's the best young defenseman.
Yes, he's a young up-and-coming defenseman.
Defensively, he's definitely got room to grow, but you're right. I mean, you know, it's more of an offensive-minded group, I would say. But, you know, when you talk about the depth, yes, you know, when you compare the Canucks to the Jets, you know, top 12 forwards are better. But, you know, Brandon Sutter, if you expected, you know, Brandon Sutter and Tyler Motte to have more goals than Elias Pettersson, then you're kidding yourself.
Of course, and that's not going to last for the entire season, and Pettersson is off to a slow start, and he's certainly so incredibly dangerous that the Jets will know that they have to keep a focus on him. Mm-hmm. But you look at this Canucks team, and they just don't seem to be very well built as a roster. You know, I'm surprised, I guess I didn't pay enough attention to it, but you look at it, and I'm like, I don't see that as a playoff roster as currently constructed, or the lineup that you're going to see against the Jets tonight.
Yeah, and I think, look, I think the one we always say the Senators, you malign wins against the Senators, but what that can do is provide confidence.
Sure.
And a team playing with confidence could have a greater impact against better teams, and we'll see what that happens. But you're right, Drew. It's not, the depth isn't there yet, really, for this Vancouver Canucks team. And obviously, they surprised some folks with what they were able to do, you know, last season. But is this a team that's, you know, this is a team that's on the rise, and they've got a nice farm, you know, of prospects that they're really excited about, but are they there yet? Are they that team? And again, a lot of people had Vancouver ahead of the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
I never did because I just thought the Jets are in that sort of 2-3 year window of win now, whereas I didn't anticipate that with the Vancouver Canucks to that same degree. And you know, again, there were questions about their goaltending, questions about their defense. And we'll see, you know, as the year goes on. And to the point that's been made, it does feel like the exhibition season has now concluded for some teams. Obviously, some teams played 10 games. The Jets have played 7.
Yeah, the Canucks have played 10 now.
Right. But some, obviously, the Jets have played the 7 games. So mm-hmm. that's kind of the window of what we normally see with an exhibition season. So now it kind of kicks into that next level. So we'll see, you know, and it'll be a big test for both teams. We'll see what happens tonight.
I would say this, though. Even though, you know, the Canucks right now have been unimpressive, I would take that Canucks defense over the Oilers' defense. I would take it over the Senators' defense.
That's called damning with faint praise.
No, but I mean, but that's, the Canucks are competing with the Oilers and the Flames for that last playoff spot. I think mm-hmm. we'd all agree, you know, the class of the division right now, the Leafs, the Habs, and the Jets, not just based on the standings now, but just based on talent.
Certainly.
So, I mean, that's who you're competing with right now. So, for me, it's less about the depth and more about that top line. When Pettersson, Besser, and JT Miller are playing at the level that we've come to expect, you know, it's one of the best lines in the league. So, you know, that's what I'm looking out for with this Canucks team, and that's the line you have to be aware of, even though, you know, Horvat and Hoglander and I believe it's Tanner Pearson that's on that line.
That's right.
That's a really good line, too.
Well, 9 o'clock puck drop tonight, 8 o'clock Munsey and KO with game day coverage of the Jets and the Canucks. When we come back, we'll talk from the Vancouver perspective with Patrick Johnston of Post Media. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Minuk. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can reach us here via Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can also send us your comments via text. Send your comments to 129090. And our website, which has the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio, including all the latest news about Winnipeg Jets game day skate, that's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From Post Media in Vancouver, British Columbia, we're pleased to welcome to the program Patrick Johnston. Patrick, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Hey, guys. Great. Good to be back.
I appreciate you joining us. Appreciate you giving us some time on this Saturday morning. Obviously talking about the Canucks ahead of their visit to Winnipeg tonight to face the Jets. And, boy, are the Ottawa Senators a panacea for every team that might need a boost of confidence. The Canucks winning that three-game series against the Senators, outscoring them 16-3. You know, for a team that was, you know, it was close to DEFCON zero there in British Columbia early to start the year, how much better is it now having won those three games?
Well, certainly the standings look a lot better. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You know, in the end, the Canucks are heading out on this road trip and they're playing three tough teams. And I think this will be the true test of whether they have improved, because that series against Montreal last week was pretty tough. If you're a Canucks fan, not great on defense, and you know, you're not going to be able to outscore your problems consistently. But yeah, playing the Senators was turned out to be exactly as you said. It was a panacea, made everyone feel better, and certainly I think the players themselves felt better. They found their way back to sort of playing the hockey they wanted to play.
Patrick, right before we had you on, we were talking about, you know, the Canucks, and I think everybody would agree that, you know, this has been a mixed start to the season in terms of the results. And you know, I look at that top line, you know, that's affectionately known as the Lotto line, and, you know, you expect more production, you know, especially out of Elias Pettersson. And he obviously, you know, has had a couple of multi-point games there against the Senators, as we were just talking about. But, you know, watching this team and covering this team, like, can you explain why it's been such a, you know, rough start for Pettersson and Miller? Maybe not so much, you know, Brock Besser, because he's been pretty consistent you know, through the first 10 games of the season. But with Pettersson specifically, you know, what are you seeing from him?
You know what? There have been plenty of theories thrown around. I'm not sure any of us really have the exact answer. Partly, I think this is just the reality of our COVID world and the fact that we can't sit down with a guy and have that quiet conversation to see how they're doing. But, you know, I mean, I think it's just one of those ones that it was, you know, obviously players are creatures of habit. Not having a training camp, and, you know, affected different players in different ways. And Pettersson just, he didn't get into that groove early on. I mean, we see him burst out of the gates the last two seasons. And, you know, he played okay in the season opener against Edmonton. But after that, just kind of, yeah, he just fell into a bit of a funk. And, you know, it didn't help, I think, that JT Miller was out for the first three games of the year because he was in COVID quarantine. He never had it, but he'd been exposed, it seems, or he was identified as a contact, so he wasn't playing. But, you know, Miller was such an important sort of sidekick for him last year. Having him out of the lineup probably didn't help. Obviously, Miller coming back into the lineup, you know, almost 2 weeks ago now, you know, it took him a few games to find his own groove. And overall, I'd say that, yeah, the line hasn't been playing that great, but Brock Besser's been scoring, and I don't think he's been a worry. You know, I think it's more than anything, it was a question of confidence. Pettersson's been so successful in his career at every level. You know, he's never really run into speed bumps like this before. And, you know, I think some of it was just that. It was just sort of learning how to cope with that kind of a challenge this early in the season when everything's off. You know, in normal times they'd be able to spend some time with each other, Certainly the change in the dressing room, I think, mattered to some degree. You know, Jacob Markstrom was like a big brother to him. And, you know, Chris Tanev as well. I think Tanev was such a sort of quiet leader for that young group, and, you know, his influence was gone. So there's kind of resetting that room too a little bit. Obviously, 10 games in, they'll have a better sense of where they're at. But I think it was just a, you know, in the end, it seems strange to say with such a normally confident player, but it really was a confidence issue, I think. And we'll see how things go, but certainly has finally sort of turned the corner, it looked like, at least anyway, against Ottawa.
Well, Patrick, back in 2015-16, folks in Winnipeg were paying attention to a kid named Kyle Connor, who the Jets had drafted, was playing out of the University of Michigan on this CCM line. But part of the CCM line was this kid named Tyler Mott, who was also putting up quite a number of goals at the University of Michigan. He seems to be finding that scoring touch so far this season for the Vancouver Canucks. Already has 5, beat his total from last year of 4. So what seems to be going right for Tyler Mott this season?
He's a good story. You know, I mean, a guy that I don't think anybody's ever had any sort of illusions about what he should be at the NHL level, a hustling, grinding kind of depth winger kind of guy that, you know, you need in your team, a good character guy. And, has a scoring touch in his background. It's just been, I think that line as a whole has been a bit surprising. He's mostly played on a fourth line with Jay Beagle, and Beagle came in with a lot of question marks this season, big contract. I think getting up there, he's 35 now, slowing down, you know, had struggled, I would say, last season a lot of the time, other than dominating on faceoffs. You know, would have to play and, you know, just was having a hard time competing. But that line as a whole has been really effective, playing at the right end of the ice. And Mott has used that sort of spark plug nature that he has. He's a quick little guy, and, you know, he scored a couple of really spectacular goals in the playoffs last summer, and he sort of carried on with that. And he gets to the net, and he's just got a nose for finding pucks. And obviously, you know, he's shooting, 23-24% right now, so that's not going to carry on. He's got a fair bit of luck in there. But, you know, you make your own luck, as they say, and he's certainly a guy that's been doing everything to give himself opportunities to be effective, and you know, he's turned himself into a fan favorite because of it.
Patrick Johnston is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Patrick covers the Vancouver Canucks for Post Media. You know, Patrick, I look at this Canucks forward group, and obviously the Miller, Pettersson, Besser line, that's a very good line. Can't say anything bad about that line.
Yeah,
but after that, it just doesn't seem to be a ton of depth there. You know, is this sort of, you know, where the glaring absence of Tyler Toffoli, a guy the Canucks wanted to re-sign, tried to re-sign in the offseason, but couldn't get it done with the salary cap situation, is that where his absence is most glaring?
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is a bit of a cap story. You know, I mentioned Jay Beagle, good dude, probably making too much for what you want to pay a fourth liner. And there's a few examples of that if you look up and down the roster. You know, this is a team that has cap problems. You know, unfortunately, there are 31 teams in NHL. Unfortunately, there's only really 2 smart AGMs from Winnipeg to solve problems like that. But Toffoli would have been a guy to bring in. And I think they made a choice. It was complicated. They made a choice, though. They decided to stick with Jake Virtanen, who now finds himself a healthy scratch. They decided to re-sign him. And, you know, what little money they had went to him. And there would have been there were complicated ways to do it, but there would have been a way to keep Toffoli around. And, you know, he showed up and played with a vengeance almost. You know, the Canucks had traded for him last spring and looked like a move that, you know, it was neat, you know, it was kind of a needed move in the moment, but you sort of sat there, shit, geez, you know, this is the guy you gotta want to keep. And then they didn't do it. And part of that was because of how the budget was set. I mean, every team obviously is dealing with COVID, and lots of teams are looking not to spend. But, you know, the Canucks have really pulled back on spending. So they may be, a cap team in cap dollars. But in terms of real dollars, they've really dialed that back. They're not one of the bigger spending teams in the league right now. And, you know, the consequence was that they went not with a guy that looked exactly like the kind of player they need, a winger who plays hard in the middle, who has a nose for the net, who's going to score 25-30 goals a year. And instead they stuck with a guy that I think is a bit of a legacy choice. You know, here's a guy that they picked so high in the draft 6-7 years ago. I think that has, you know, I think sort of there are preferences internally for him for whatever reason. And yeah, you know, Jake Virtanen has scored one goal. It was a bit of a fluke goal. Was found himself on the fourth line, now is a scratch, and Tyler Toffoli is starring for the Canadiens, and it kind of says everything you need to know, you know, as far as that part of the story goes.
To your point about Virtanen there, Patrick, I mean, you know, would you say that the organization are wearing blinders towards his actual on-ice impact?
It's tough to say. I mean, after the game on Thursday, Travis Green, head coach Travis Green, was asked about the Virtanen scratch, and you know, basically, he didn't shy away from it. He said, you know, this is a guy who knows he needs to be better, who wants to be better, you know, who need, and they believe will be better. You know, I mean, that's what the coach has to say. But they've been down this road before. That's the strange part about it. Is, you know, last summer he didn't do much in the playoffs. Coming out of the playoffs, GM Jim Benning was very open about, you know, basically, you know, how disappointed they were. You know, here they finally were in the playoffs, playing the type of hockey that they believed he should be able to thrive in. You know, to be honest, Jake Virtanen looks like he should be a big rumbling winger. He's not a big rumbling winger. He's always been a good skater. You know, in junior, he was a guy that was bigger than his peers. He would burst past them. He would score a lot of goals on breakaways. Obviously, in the NHL, that's a lot harder to do. And, you know, goals are scored on top of the crease, and that's just never been his instinct. And, you know, I think that's the other thing, is that there's sort of this perception of what he could be, what he should be, and then what he really has been. And, you know, they're kind of stuck with him now. And in the end, they can only do what they've said, which is that they hope he figures it out and he recognizes what kind of player he needs to be. You know, he's a perfectly fine as a fourth-line winger, but, you know, at the end of the day, he was drafted high in the draft, and those are the kind of guys that you want to be more than just a fourth-line winger. Tyler Motte is a fourth-line winger, and, you know, you can kind of find him, you know, down in the draft. He's a guy that you should find exactly that. Zach McEwen is a fine grinding winger that they signed as a free agent out of junior. You know, those are the guys that you fill those roles with. He shouldn't be guys that, you know, guys that you draft as high as Virtanen. You know, there comes with expectation. You mentioned a guy like Kyle Connor. Like, there's a great example. You need a top forward high in the draft. And Virtanen hasn't been that. And, you know, they've got him signed for another season after this one. We'll see what happens with all that. But, you know, I think in the end, the fact that he's been scratched 10 games into the season does tell you how they're feeling about him and that they're feeling frustrated.
Patrick, last question for you here. You know, tonight's game against the, you know, between the Jets and the Canucks, Braden Holtby started the last game versus the Senators, but are we expecting it to be Thatcher Demko? And how would you kind of assess, you know, the split games between Demko and Holtby? I think a lot of people, you know, like to just look at the numbers, you know, on NHL.com or HockeyDB, and the numbers haven't been good. But, you know, numbers aside, how would you kind of assess, you know, the duo of Holtby and Demko?
Well, I think it was always going to be a challenge for most goalies to start up this season, just because of the fact they haven't been able to play preseason. I think that's been a big story here. And, you know, Demko obviously played incredible hockey against Vegas, showed flashes of that kind of form earlier in the season. Braden Holtby, obviously, is a Stanley Cup winner, former Vezina winner, who I think has struggled the last couple seasons with the Capitals. So, you know, there were a lot of question marks coming in. Could these guys really pull it off? And initially, they were fine. You know, they weren't an issue. There were never any sort of real moments where you're like, wow, the Canucks lost because of the goalie. Now, the game against Montreal last weekend, you know, it wasn't Holtby's fault, but the first two goals weren't great. And, you know, if he makes those saves, they were tough saves, but he makes those saves, you know, that's giving your team a chance to win. And that's what Jacob Markstrom did almost every night last season. And, you know, so this week has been better. Demko was great on Wednesday night. Holtby was really good on Thursday night. Both have now kind of pulled their save percentages back up to where they kind of need to be. They're both sort of league average, which is fine. The Canucks need more than league average, really, if they're going to have success this season. So, you know, it's a work in progress. But neither's been a disappointment. But, you know, I think I wrote earlier this week, I said they need more than just not disappointment. They need them to start stealing some games, because, you know, the reality is, you know, as exciting as the Canucks offense was last year, a lot of that was about the power play, and a lot of that you know, we wouldn't have noticed if the goalie hadn't been playing so well. And the truth is, Jacob Markstrom was a huge factor in last season's success. And now they need both those guys to replicate it.
Patrick Johnston covers the Vancouver Canucks for Post Media. The Jets and the Canucks, 9 o'clock puck drop, Central Time, 7 o'clock in BC later tonight. Patrick, appreciate your time, appreciate your insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Always happy to be here, guys. Stay safe.
Thanks, Patrick. You too. When we come back, the Pittsburgh Penguins are in the market for a new general manager as Jim Rutherford abruptly resigned. And still to come at the bottom of the hour, we talk about the Calgary Flames with Haley Salvian, the Jets and the Flames, a four-game series after tonight's contest against the Canucks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
No penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manoop. You can hear the Illegal Curve live Saturday mornings from 9 to noon on TSN Radio 1290.
No, had no idea. And you're right. I do spend a lot of time talking with Jimmy Rutherford. And in fact, he's media friendly, always has an open door policy, not always willing to share his deep, dark secrets specific to hockey, as we can all appreciate. But I spoke to him earlier this week, Gino, in fact, no idea that this was being considered.
TSN hockey insider Darren Dreger expressing his surprise, expressing his shock about the stunning resignation of Pittsburgh Penguins general manager Jim Rutherford that occurred earlier this week. We talk about that coming up next. But first, this segment brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Remember, every Friday night, starting at 8:30 p.m., put the kids to bed, settle in, buy your ticket ahead of time. It's Zoom comedy shows. There was another one last night. Amazing attendance, sold out crowds. Get your tickets bright and early for next Friday's Zoom comedy show with just a great lineup of comedians. Those are available at RumorsComedyClub.com.
I saw that Deborah DiGiovanni was one of the comedians. I've met her before.
Oh, yeah?
Super nice. Yeah, I went to see, it was the, is it the CBC Winnipeg Comedy Festival? And
yeah.
She was involved in that. This is like, I don't know, 10 years. I went with her good friend Huss, and she did an awesome set, and then I was talking to her outside afterwards. So, yeah, just that's all I have.
Yeah, no, she's very funny, and she did a great set last night. And again, every Friday night, just a tremendous lineup of comedians from all across Canada and North America. Tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com. We all need laughter, especially as we continue in month, I think, 473 of COVID at this point.
Just
in time.
Look at my beard and you'll know how long this has been going.
That's
on.
That's a shaggy beard you got there, boy, let me tell you.
So just quickly, Paul Maurice said in his availability he expects it to take 5 to 7 days for Tucker Pullman to be up to speed.
So that would mean we wouldn't see him on the homestand against the Calgary Flames.
Right.
You know, then there's they play Monday, Tuesday, Thursday at home against the Flames, if I'm not mistaken.
Monday, Tuesday, Thursday.
Yeah, and then there's 4 days off, and then they go to Calgary on the a week from Tuesday.
And then two more against Ottawa.
Yeah, so it's a quick trip out to Alberta, then back home against the Senators. So this is certainly an opportune time for the Jets to make some hay on the schedule. Let's talk about the news out of Pittsburgh earlier this week, where Jim Rutherford just randomly and really out of nowhere, you know, the quote I saw that Mario Lemieux was stunned by this development. He up and resigns from the Pittsburgh Penguins. You have to believe that there's some internal upheaval in the Penguins organization that led to this move.
Yeah, I don't think there was anybody that wasn't surprised, right? Like it's because of where we are in the season. It just started, right? And the Penguins have a bunch of injuries on the back end. Brian Dumoulin, who, you know, is a very underrated defenseman. He's not a guy that's ever going to be talked about in the Norris conversation, but Dumoulin is a big loss for the Penguins. And I don't know if you guys saw Yannick Weber was acquired just to be a depth defenseman, but
they brought up Kevin Churchman, who folks will remember played for the Manitoba Moose.
Yeah, one of the only players in
CZ,
NHL history.
Right?
Yeah,
CZ,
a couple of CZs, I believe, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you look at the Penguins and, you know, they're not off to the hottest start. They've been doing okay, but yeah, it's very, you know, surprising. And, you know, we know that Patrick Alvin is going to take over. He was the assistant general manager, yes. And they've said that, you know, the interim GM tag is on him. There's always the chance, you know, Pierre LeBrun reported that, you know, he's going to be interviewed for the GM job. They're going to give him, you know, first dibs. But, you know, the amount of the names that have come out of the woodwork, Jason Botterill, you know, has been mentioned. He was, of course,
the AGM right, there before going to Buffalo.
Right. So, and there's a lot of, there was, you know, talk of, you know, Dale Tallon was a guy that they were going to bring in, and Jim Rutherford didn't like that.
Well, so they did the sort of the behind the scenes activities, which are really laid out very well in an article in The Athletic by Josh mm-hmm. Yowie and Rob Rossi, talk about, it seems like there's conflict between Jim Rutherford as the general manager and then between David Morehouse, who's the president and CEO yep. of the Penguins. Yeah. It seems like Morehouse was, putting his opinion strongly into hockey operations, and Rutherford was pushing back and was not so happy about that. You mentioned Dale Tallon. It sounds like somebody within the Penguins organization, you'd have to assume Morehouse, you know, wanted to bring Tallon in as an advisor, and Rutherford didn't like that idea. And it's sort of bizarre, why would Jim Rutherford, a guy who's, you know, been a general manager for so many years, 70 plus years old, been around the game of hockey basically his entire life, won a few cups in his time, yeah, why would he need advice necessarily from a guy like Dale Tallon? You bring right. Dale Tallon if you have a younger general manager right. to act as a sounding board, I think.
Right, and then, you know, there's obviously, you know, Jason Karmanos Jr.
Yeah, so what happened there is yeah. Karmanos was the Penguins' assistant general manager. He came with Rutherford from Carolina, where his dad used to own the Hurricanes, mm-hmm. and Karmanos Jr. and Rutherford were very close,
yeah.
and it sounds like Morehouse, so, or somebody in a position of power within the Penguins organization, made Rutherford fire Karmanos Jr. in the offseason, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, again, that's one of the things that a lot of times you hear whispers of, mm-hmm. but you don't see, right? And it's not something that becomes very public very often. And so, but the things that are constantly going on, the behind the scenes, I mean, there's always jockeying for positions, especially when you have people in positions of power who want more mm-hmm. and want their authority to be followed and feel that they have a right to, especially when there's not that sort of delineation between the different groupings to decide who gets to say what and who has the authority.
Yeah.
So I think it sounds like, and again, we're fairly removed from Pittsburgh, so we don't know exactly what's going on other than what we've read.
Yeah.
But again, you know, obviously when you have that sort of situation come completely out of left field, and I thought, you know, Paul Maurice was asked about it yesterday, just to bring it back to it from a local perspective, because
right.
he obviously had a connection with
Rutherford and Carolina. Yeah.
So, and he basically said, look, Jim Rutherford has looked at this backwards and forwards and upside down, and he has thought of every move down the road.
Yeah.
So Jim Rutherford, what he's suggesting is Jim Rutherford, I mean, again, I'm interpreting Paul Maurice's words, but he's saying that Jim Rutherford didn't just on a whim decide, I'm going to, you know, resign my position as the Pittsburgh Penguins general manager.
When you're 71 years old, like Rutherford is, and when you've won two Stanley Cups, like Rutherford has with the Penguins, at a point in time, there's only so much, you know, BS I think you're willing to put up with. And I suspect he probably got to that breaking point where he said, look, we're in a COVID world. You know, I don't need this so badly right now that I need to sit here and be miserable and have this, and be micromanaged by somebody who doesn't necessarily have the hockey experience.
Well, and the surprising thing to me is that Mario Lemieux was caught off guard.
Yeah.
Like, I would be, like, again, if you were the general manager of the team, and we can only reference really what we see here in Winnipeg, you would think that the general manager of the team would have the ability to bend the owner's ear, especially an owner like Mario Lemieux, and kind of have an opportunity to speak to him. But it sounds like, again, for whatever reason, that just wasn't available, because obviously Rutherford just did it and Lemieux was surprised by it. Again, that's what we're hearing, so we have to take it for what it is with a grain of salt. But again, like I said, from what Paul Maurice has indicated, there's probably some sort of plan for Jim Rutherford.
You know what's the most interesting about this, guys? Whoever becomes the next general manager of the Penguins is, where is this team going in 2 or 3 years?
Right.
Not just now. I mean, the Penguins are, you know, fighting with teams like Philadelphia and Buffalo in that East Division. Nobody expects, you know, Pittsburgh to run away with that division, of course. But, you know, with Chris Letang and Evgeny Malkin only having 1 year left on their contracts after this year, it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, could one of those guys be traded prior to the trade deadline, regardless if Pittsburgh's in a playoff spot, right? Because you know both of those guys are going to be pending UFAs. Crosby's not going anywhere. Unless Crosby tells you he wants to go somewhere, which he hasn't, obviously, he's not going anywhere. But Letang and Malkin are the big ones. And I'm not saying that anything is going to happen imminently, but they are in the last year of their contracts. And if Pittsburgh's not going to be a very good team, why are those guys sticking around?
They're Chicago East is what they are when you really consider it. If you look at the trajectories between the Penguins and the Blackhawks.
And a quick thought, though, and it's one thing we've talked about. If you have the Stanley Cups, that's all that matters.
That's true. You can't take the banners don't move at that point in time. When we come back, we discuss the Calgary Flames. The Jets and the Flames 4-game series starts on Monday night. Haley Salvian of The Athletic joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Reminder, the Jets and the Canucks, 9 o'clock puck drop tonight. Munsey and KO, they'll be in at 8 o'clock getting you ready for tonight's contest before the Jets meet the Flames for 4 in a row starting Monday night. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text message, send your text to 129090, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com, she covers the Calgary Flames. We're pleased to welcome back to the program Haley Salvian. Haley, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Yeah, good morning. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Obviously, a big game for the Flames tonight in Montreal. They've lost 3 in a row. We heard from Rasmus Anderson earlier on our program talking about the team having a closed-door meeting after the loss on Thursday night. You know, I guess the question is, you know, how panicky is the situation in Calgary with the Flames right now? Is it a bit of a blip, or are there more serious concerns that a closed-door meeting may not be able to solve?
Yeah, well, you know what? When I was kind of just looking at these next few games, you know, coming out of the two losses against the Leafs, it wasn't going to be easy going from losing to Toronto twice and then heading into Montreal because, in my opinion, I think the Habs look like maybe the most lethal team top to bottom throughout their lineup. And so you lose two straight and then you're about to head to what is arguably the better team in the North Division, depending on who you talk to. So it wasn't going to be an easy 4-game stretch. And that's certainly true with this entire North Division. I mean, it's so close through the middle with, you know, I think the Leafs and the Canadiens are maybe, you know, in that maybe top tier. And then you've got the Flames, the Jets, the Oilers, they're so close through the middle. And then, of course, you have the Canucks and the Ottawa Senators. But, you know, this division was never going to be easy. But I just think that, you know, this Calgary Flames team has pretty lofty expectations for themselves. You know, on paper, they thought they had the depth to be really good this season and dropping 3 straight. They're below 500 now. And it's just, you know, I don't think it's full-blown panic mode because it is still only 6 games into the season. But there's just a few trends that have popped up that haven't been great so far. It's the, you know, to sound cliche, but it's the not playing full 60. You know, they've taken full periods off in a really bad way. The first period against the Leafs the other day was not good. You know, they came out better in the first against Montreal and still dropped down 2-0, and then, you know, they got scored on a third time, and I think it just, you could see how much it deflated the team, and there's been some big energy lapses. And after the game the other night, Sean Monahan was saying that the team's just not playing for each other. There's no emotion, and that's something that they need to get back. So I would assume that kind of emotion and that playing for each other is something that was really talked about at that meeting.
You know, Haley, a lot of people, I agree with you. I think, you know, when you look at the Flames' depth, I mean, it's pretty good. And I think a lot of the question marks were more so on the back end. But, you know, as you've wrote about in The Athletic, I mean, Noah Hanifin and Chris Tanev has been, you know, the Flames' best pair. Tanev, obviously, you know, being the new face in town. And, you know, Rasmus Anderson, Juuso Välimäki, Nikita Nesterov, I mean, you know, that fills out your top six there. But could you simplify the Flames' problems to date that they're just not getting enough goal scoring right now?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I did write in The Athletic how, you know, the defensive depth is actually looking quite good. And then the last game for Juuso Välimäki and Nikita Nesterov was really difficult. You know, they made some mistakes that are kind of, they symbolized, you know, just a young hockey player. You know, Juuso Välimäki missed the better part of the last two seasons with injury. Nikita Nesterov went back to the KHL after his first stint in the NHL. He hasn't played in the league since 2017. So there were some examples of them learning on the job. And I guess I almost kind of jinxed the blue line play because, you know, the third pair had a really difficult night. You know, I think you could kind of look at a couple of mistakes that they made on all three of the first goals for the Canadiens the other night. So, you know, but there are some questions on the D. You know, Mark Giordano and Rasmus Anderson certainly have, you know, been not caved in, but they haven't looked, you know, as good as they could be. And I don't know how much that is attributed to matchups, playing against the best players on a nightly basis, or how much it's, you know, maybe we shake things up. But certainly I think that the biggest issue, though, has been from the first game and continues to be through six, is they're not getting enough scoring from their bottom six. The Flames went out and made some moves for some depth players because they kind of wanted to. The issue with the Calgary Flames last season and years before is that if you shut down Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, you're not going to get the same amount of scoring. Matthew Tkachuk and Elias Lindholm, their line is really driving play offensively, and Johnny and Monty are playing very, very well too. So the Flames at least have a solid top six, but, you know, Brad Treliving went out and signed guys like Dominic Simon, like Josh Levo, like Nordstrom, to round out the bottom six so that they could have four lines that they could roll, that could drive play, that could score, that could match up against anybody. And you're just not seeing that offensive driving from the bottom six, certainly not the fourth line. The fourth line gets, you know, consistently outshot, and they just kind of take away momentum every time they're on the ice. So the bottom six and that kind of depth scoring is definitely something that needs to be fixed, because I think Johnny Gaudreau, Lindholm, Tkachuk, Monahan, like, they're scoring and they all look pretty good out there. So their best players are their best players, but the rest of the guys need to start contributing, and they need to find out what pairings and what combinations are going to work throughout the rest of the lineup, because that's certainly been a big issue.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Haley Salvian of The Athletic. She covers the Calgary Flames. The Jets and the Flames will do battle four straight times starting Monday night here in Winnipeg.
You know, Haley, Drew said you cover the Calgary Flames, but you may also be covering the Stockton Heat, because about 8 days ago when the AHL released their schedule, one of the things they didn't do was release the All-Canadian Division schedule. And Darren Dreger had mentioned that there was a good chance that the Stockton Heat would seek a provisional relocation to Calgary. So we've later learned, of course, now that they're going to join the Manitoba Moose and the three Eastern Canadian teams in a All-Canadian AHL division. So what's going on with Calgary? Because obviously that, you know, it doesn't just happen overnight. Are the players who would make up the Stockton Heat, are they in Calgary right now? And really, what do you know about the Stockton Heat and the way the plan forward for the AHL franchise of the Flames?
Yeah, well, it's my understanding that after training camp, a lot of the players who were cut and reassigned to Stockton, they did remain in Calgary, just because of the unknown of the AHL season. So a lot of those players who were assigned to Stockton got to stay in Calgary, and they've been skating on their own at the Saddle Dome after the Flames practices. So it's my understanding that the majority of those players are still in Calgary. They never went to Stockton. So it'll be interesting. I mean, the Belleville Senators, like you said, you know, when the schedule got released, you know, their games weren't published. You know, the Canadian team's games weren't set in stone. So that could have maybe been like a red flag of like, okay, are there some changes coming here? And I just think with the travel restrictions, it just wasn't going to work for the Stockton Heat this season, playing in Stockton. And, you know, I think this, you know, it makes it a little bit easier in terms of the call-ups, because one of the big question marks this season was, okay, the fact that the Flames affiliate is in Stockton, where you have to quarantine for anywhere between 7 to 14 days. You know, how is that going to impact who makes a taxi squad? How is that going to impact call-ups? So I think the fact that they're playing in Calgary, you know, it is unfortunate for the city of Stockton. I do know that, you know, I think having the Heat play there is good for their community, but it's certainly going to be a bonus for the Calgary Flames this season to have their affiliate so close, and it's going to make call-ups and utilizing the taxi squad a lot more streamlined.
Haley, so much of the Flames' struggles so far this year sounds like, you know, to some degree, comes down to emotion. And I look at the absence of TJ Brody, of course, him being, he had been with the Flames for so many years, and now he's in Calgary. You know, how much do you think they're missing TJ Brody, both on ice and in the dressing room early on this season?
Yeah, you know what? It's a difficult question because this is my first year in Calgary, so I didn't get a chance to see what TJ Brody was like in the locker room. I didn't see the impact that he had in the room. But I think that from what I've heard, like, TJ Brody's a very, very quiet person. He keeps to himself, you know, certain, like, I'm sure he was a leader in that dressing room, but he wasn't the vocal, emotional, and like standing up in the room to get everyone to rally around him. He doesn't seem like that kind of leader just from what I've heard. Again, I haven't seen him in the room, but I just think that you look at the leadership and you still have your key pieces, like Mark Giordano is still the captain of that hockey team. Matthew Tkachuk is still the emotional spark plug of that hockey team. Milan Lucic is a major, major presence inside that dressing room. For all the criticism he gets for the way that he plays on the ice, he didn't start the season very well. He's still in that room. So their key leadership pieces are there. So, you know, I'm sure, you know, losing a guy like TJ Brody on the blue line, you know, you can talk about, you know, is their blue line better or worse for it? I think Chris Tanev has been incredible. I think he's a very, very solid defenseman. He's not an offensive guy by any means, but that's not why they signed him. And I think Tanev brings a really good steadying presence on the ice, and he probably brings that in the room too. So I wouldn't say that the emotional issues are because they lost TJ Brody, because the lack of emotion is something that's happened with this Flames core even when TJ Brody was there. So it's one of those things where you just don't know what to pinpoint that on. It's a flip of the switch in the mentality in that room, and that's a collective thing, and I don't think that that's something that TJ Brody would have, you know, changed.
Haley, last question for you here. Dylan Dubé is a player that I've really liked in his short time in the NHL, and I know he's out of the lineup right now. I think he's missed three games with the Flames, but the four games coming up next week between the Jets and the Flames, is there a chance that Dubé is going to be back in the lineup? Has there been any update on his condition?
Yeah, so he's been day-to-day with a lower body injury, and head coach Jeff Ward said that he said this 3 days ago. He said that Dubé was very close to being ready. He's been skating. He was at morning skate the other day in Montreal, but they're just kind of holding him out as you know, just precautionary. They want to be extra careful. They don't want to put him in too early and kind of flare up an injury. But, you know, this morning, we've heard again, you know, he technically still remains day to day. But Jeff Ward said this morning after the morning skate that he'll be reevaluated ahead of puck drop. And they'll decide if he's going to play. So he's a game time decision tonight in Montreal.
Haley Salvian covers the Calgary Flames for TheAthletic.com. Haley, and appreciate your.
Did you just combine Haley and Salvian?
I did combine that there. Yeah. Sorry there, Haley. I appreciate your time and your insight, and thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Haley.
Take care, Haley. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN1290.ca.
Thursday night in Minnesota, Wild forward Kevin Fiala was assessed a major penalty and a game misconduct for boarding Kings defenseman Matt Roy. As the video shows, Roy skates toward a loose puck chipped into the King zone as Fiala pursues from behind.
Three-game suspension for Kevin Fiala. We got a text message about an hour ago, almost an hour ago to the dot. Good morning, guys. Just tuning in. I don't know if you have discussed this yet, but the Fiala hit and subsequent suspension. Probably the most dangerous hit in hockey. Did you think 3 games was enough? So thank you to the texter for knowing what we were going to do in the show plan an hour later. That was pretty clever. Did you see the hit, Ezzy? I mean, your thoughts on it. It was a 3-game suspension.
Yeah, I didn't see the hit live. I saw the replay. But, I think 3 games is fair. But you go back to the first game of the season between the Jets and the Flames. If that's a 3-game suspension, Noah Hanifin's hit on Kyle Connor, to me, guys, is at least a 1 or 2-game suspension. To me, it was very similar. Right? Like, I don't know what you guys think, but like, the hit from behind, I didn't think Kevin Fiala's was much worse than Noah Hanifin on Kyle Connor. Like,
I thought that when the Fiala one was worse in that, because, Fiala was still had momentum and
right.
he was
and
coming
he,
from,
right.
he was skating.
And he pushes him into the boards.
Yeah, he was skating
that.
At Roy, whereas Hanifin was more, didn't have a head of steam behind
sure.
him.
Yeah, fair enough. And that's why, that Hanifin hit gets 1 game. But yeah, 3 games to me seems fair.
I also assume, though, 3 games in this shortened season is actually probably more in an 82
more like
game
5 games.
No, it's more like a 5-7 game suspension, no question about it.
Right. I mean, it was pretty dirty. He's, Connor was still a little bit closer. I'm not saying that the Hanifin hit on Connor was good, because it wasn't. But Connor was still a little bit closer to the boards, whereas the way Roy gets driven into the boards, he's at such a bad angle that his neck is fully down. Like, he's hitting the boards almost with
Fiala,
his neck as opposed to with Connor, which it was more his face.
I think what Steve Fiala is, though, is he has no history of suspension.
True. There is no history of suspension there, but it was a bad play, I think, all around. And I think 3 games in this shortened season is probably justifiable. And it hurts a Minnesota Wild team that doesn't have a lot of offense by any stretch of the imagination. So thank you to the texter for that nice text. And
setting
suggestion.
Us up.
Exactly, setting us up. That's it for this Saturday morning. Boy, that flew by.
Yep.
Big thank you to all of our guests on today's show. Jason Bell joined us, Mike Zeisberger, Daniel Fink, Haley Salvian, and Patrick Johnston.
In case or as you like to call her, Halian.
That's right. In case you missed any of the show, it's going to be available for download on tsn1290.ca, on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's wherever you get your best podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us, let us know what you think of the program. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support the Legal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean back at the station doing a great job. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
No penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manuk. You can hear the Illegal Curve live Saturday mornings from 9 to noon on TSN Radio 1290.